overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change, to create a brand new life. I am overflowing.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
The mindfulness bell. It takes us into a radical stopping. To stop thinking. To stop efforting. To stop trying to figure out life with our mind. And in that stopping, to open to present moment awareness. One of the great sacred realizations of all time is that all we have is the moment. We experience life one breath at a time. And so when we get painfully simple about conscious breathing, then we take an inhalation with gratitude, and we can exhale with a simple yes, saying yes to the moment that we've been given. Another conscious inhalation, and we observe the freedom that's inherent within a mind that doesn't think, and we exhale and we say yes. It's what Eckhart Tolle calls the no mind, what Ernest Holmes calls the universal mind. And so by just simply ringing a bell and stopping, we enter into this field of awareness that is fully awake, that is unconditioned by thought patterns and belief systems and opinions and conclusions. And we begin to cultivate a life experience from mindful awareness. If you are into affirmations, you might say, "This is the moment that life has created for me. Let me rejoice and be glad in this moment." And so if you're a Buddhist monk, you might say, "Breathing in, I breathe in present moment. Exhale, I declare wonderful moment." Present moment, inhalation. Wonderful moment, exhalation. And so through the simple act of ringing a bell, a simple act of stopping, a simple act of opening, we begin to access that which is always there. We can call it spirit. We can call it the Christ consciousness. We can call it awake awareness. We can call it the presence of love. The word doesn't matter. What does matter is that we touch that very essence in which we all experience the moment. And so then we might enter in an inquiry, what is experiencing this moment right now? And we wait. Is it my anxious self that is experiencing this moment? If so, we smile to the anxious one. Is it my curious inner child that is experiencing this inner moment? We smile to that curious child within. Is it a peace that passes all understanding and a deep sense of calm? If that is what is experiencing this moment, we smile to that calm and to that peace. And so by entering into this space today, consciously awake and aware, we've said yes. This is the moment, and we are the ones that we've been waiting for. And we rest in that playful experience of now. There's a wonderful book by Eckhart Tolle called The Power of Now, where he reminds us to live in the moment and let our life be an unfoldment, one moment to the next, where our success is determined by our quality involvement in every single nanosecond. And so I am successfully sitting in a chair, aligning my spine, opening my heart chakra, taking the cosmic eraser and erasing the chalkboard of my mind, my to-do list, my concerns, my opinions, my conclusions. Back and forth, this mystical eraser goes until the mind is clear and the heart is wide open and the body is willing to show up for this life experience with gratitude. Enthusiasm. It comes from the word entheos, to be filled with God. Enthusiastic to be in this experience of spiritual community. When they speak about taking refuge in the Sangha is the spiritual community. The invitation, as Thich Nhat Hanh would say, is to be like the river. The river is the Sangha, and it's always fluidic. In order to be in the river of peace, he said, we let go of our nature as the drop of water, and we merge with something much larger, so that we meet in that field of peace, that field of love, that field of imagination, that field of intuitive insight. And we say, yes. And as it says in the scripture, we wait upon the Lord. We wait upon this field of awareness to enlighten us, to inspire us, to motivate us, to discover something that's already there, so intimate, so profound, and so simple at the same time. When you're ready to play with me in the playground of the unmanifest, I invite you to open your eyes, open your hearts, awaken your soul. You're a soulful being. My beloved Adam had a conversation with his four-year-old on his what he says is his favorite subject, which is death. And he was telling me how excited he was to have a conversation with the four-year-old who says, when you die, you're all that's left is a skeleton. And Adam said, yeah, the skeleton is left here, but who you are doesn't die. And he touched his heart and he looked into his four-year-old and he said, he got it, that we're soul beings, we're eternal beings, and spirit was never born and never dies. Is 4 years of age too early to have the conversation? I would say no, it's not. And then when you encounter the physical death in whatever form that might be, you can actually touch your heart and know that they never left. They're still here with us. I'm 73 years of age now, and I've had so many teachers and my own friends and ancestors that are not on the planet anymore in form, but their essence is still here with me. You know, Tess, before she left, she made this beautiful twinkle light piece of art. And every time I plug it in, I feel her twinkling back at me. Now, that may sound kind of crazy. Every time I hold my grandmother's gravy spoon, it was this old wooden spoon that she made so much gravy. She was a Norwegian, that the spoon is all worn down on that one side. But every time I pick up that spoon, I feel her energy with me. So what if the opportunity for all of us is to begin to see that which is always there? In the midst of a changing world, there is a changeless reality. And we could call it going home. Going home to the peace, going home to the calm, going home to the love. And you know what I really am so excited about in this evolutionary process of awakening is that we're all awakening at the same time, and that this something that awakens is intimate to each one of us. You don't have to have a degree. You don't have to have studied a lot. You just have to be able to stop and open and listen and maybe hold up a flower and look in the flower and see that it's talking to you. My beloved daughter, Terry, she said she was talking to the birds the other day, and someone said, "You talk to them, so do I." Well, then there's a pair of us. How boring to be a somebody. But to be someone who can converse with the universe, can speak with the trees and the birds and all of the God's critters, there's something going on there. Could we learn to listen to a language of spirit? A language that gets clearer when you learn to listen with your heart. So I'm going to play about in this month of February with my favorite subject, which is the subject of love. And the theme for the month is the gifts of love. And so by the end of this month, we will explore what those gifts might be. I was thinking about it this morning, to experience love as a felt embrace. You know, I feel embraced every time I walk in the center. There's so much love in the windows that Virginia Burroughs did the stained glass, in the paintings that are all around that people have given me so lovingly, in the penguin that Barbara Rollins, knowing that it's my spirit animal, she brought in one Sunday, and I feel the spirit of the penguin. My beloved husband, he goes away a week every month to some remote place because his soul craves his solitude. And he always wants me to go away. When are you going to go on one of those spiritual retreats so that I can have my space back? Anyway. And so he went to Bowling Green, Kentucky for the first time. And usually he likes to go to places where he can play the slot machines because he loves the casinos. And he knows that I would never go to a casino. So he goes to Bowling Green, Kentucky. And normally he stays in the city, but this time he stayed in the country, at some old southern plantation, and he had a little casita there. And as he got there, the lady had made a huge, sugary, sticky bun thing, kind of like you do, Jean Ann. And he sent me a photograph, and he says, "This will kill me." He says, "I cannot eat this." And then 24 hours later, it's half eaten. And he said, "I think I OD'd on the sticky buns." But then every day she would come, and she'd bring him homemade soup, and she'd bring him this and that. And she said, "There is an old horse on the land, and his name is Stanley, and he'll probably come up to the gate and want you to feed him." So instead of rushing off to the casino, he went outside, and there was Stanley waiting for him to get his carrot. And I made sure I put a bag of carrots in his Coleman cooler. And one carrot at a time, he'd give it to the horse, Stanley, and Stanley would nod his head, and he'd bump his head up. And he said, "I think he was saying, 'Thank you, David.'" And so then... You know, when you go on an adventure, don't plan what it's going to look like. Stay open to the surprises. So he says there was nowhere to walk. There's no city. There's no sidewalks. So he's walking in the middle of the country, and it's reputed to have 300-year-old beech trees there. So he's looking for the old trees because he loves trees. And as he's walking down the country road, a Rottweiler comes running down the path chasing after him. And I get a text from him saying, "I've been attached by a Rottweiler." And I said, "Did you mean to say attacked?" He says, "No, attached." The farmer said, her partner died, and she's looking for a new partner. So she came running down. And the whole time he was there, this old female Rottweiler was with him on the path of life. And he felt so much love. So divine love, as Ernest Holmes would say, brings together and maintains together those who belong together. So he went for experience, what he thought was going to be one of playing the slot machines, and he ended up feeding an old horse and being with a Rottweiler who was missing her partner. And this was his experience of love. So in the gifts of love, we don't know how they're going to show up. They show up in the most amazing ways. Jean Ann, last fall, she gave me a jar, and in that jar there were two twigs, and on those twigs were two little cocoons. from some butterflies that had made their cocoons in her yard, and she gives them to me just before winter's ready to start. Well, lo and behold, one of them opens and she has the wings and she's flatty, but it's too cold to let her out. And so then I'm codependent. How can I keep the caterpillar alive and honor the caterpillar? And there was this beautiful experience of love with something as humble as a little monarch. She was not a monarch, she was a swallowtail. A female swallowtail, because I Googled them up, and she was a female swallowtail. And one day she had swallowtail death. I found her lying on the floor. And, you know, I put her in a sacred spot where I have the ashes of baby Speck and Bert, and she's sitting up there with them. And I bowed to her. So her spirit was never born and never died, and she still kind of lives with me. So what if, when we open to this love experience, we get to experience the teachings of love. It's what I talked about last week. Thich Nhat Hanh wrote a little book called The Teachings on Love. And he talked about the four immeasurable mindsets that we need to have. And I love it when they challenge us to expand our consciousness. One of the mindsets, he says, is to move in loving kindness. To move in loving kindness. So I was with that little butterfly. I was in loving kindness. With the horse, Trey was with loving kindness. With the old dog that needed a partner, loving kindness. That's one of the immeasurable minds. And when we enter into it, it doesn't know boundaries and limitations. My beloved Adam picked up a guy who was hitchhiking on the road, and before you know it, he drove him all the way to Tennessee instead of dropping him at the next corner, because loving kindness met this individual. The second immeasurable mind that Thich Nhat Hanh talks about is equanimity. How in the gift of love, you embrace it all. You embrace the challenge. My neighbor Chris found a feral cat that was living in the gutter in our street. This was a cat that was all covered with mats and things. No one could get near it. And now all of a sudden he opened his heart and he carries the cat around in his arms. He has every challenge on the planet. He named the cat Trey. So he carries his tray and I carry my tray. And this old cat has brought love to these two individuals. A feral cat opened their heart. So when you have equanimity, you don't say, I can love this one and not that one. No, you love all of it. You love even the problem part. Adam was sharing with me his son had a tantrum and he was getting all angry. And so he managed to talk to his son about, let's give the anger a name. And I think we called it Banger because he bangs on his hands. And so when Banger shows up, he extends love to Banger. Not that it's only the good little boy that I love, but I even love the angry little boy. So that's that love with equanimity. And then Thich Nhat Hanh says the immeasurable mind of joy. When you live in joy, you can even face it when your daughter snaps at you and you're not going to kill her, because joy is operating in the show. And then the last one, the last immeasurable mind is the space of compassion, to open your heart to the suffering of the world. On Wednesday night, after we do our Wednesday night live class, and by the way, there's a sign-up sheet for the Wednesday night live, and there's also a sign-up sheet for the new class that I'll be doing in March. It's going to be called The Art of Living on Thich Nhat Hanh, because he's so in me, so that'll be a fun one to teach. But after the Wednesday night satsang this Wednesday, I go into the living room and I turn on Nova, and she always has a thing on nature. And up in Bowling Green, Trey was watching the same thing that I was watching in Huntsville. It was all about the penguins. And the penguins all over the planet, and how loving the penguins are, and how they nurture their young, and how, I mean, I felt like I was in penguin heaven until they had to talk about the predators to the penguins, the sea walruses. And they started going after the baby penguins, and I had to turn off the show because I couldn't face it. But in a sense, compassion, to have compassion for the sea walruses that need to also feed their young. So compassion is an interesting thing. When I watch BBC News, I try to get the global information on the planet, and you notice all the suffering that's taken on this planet. And we're doing this wonderful class on Llewellyn von Lee where he talks about awakening the heart of the world. And he says we must be willing to open our heart to the suffering on the planet. And the way that they use their prayer is, I'm willing to take the suffering into my heart. And then surrender, Seamus's favorite word, surrender how it's going to unfold to divine love. Divine love knows how to assist us so that wherever compassion meets the suffering, we can be present with that suffering. But we first need to discover it for ourselves. Last night at 3 a.m, I woke up with a stomach ache. Oh, and it was painful. And I went downstairs. I didn't want to keep Trey up. And I'm with the pain in my tummy, and I Google up Thich Nhat Hanh, and he says, breathe into the suffering. And the very thing that we did with the mindfulness bell. And once the suffering is met, well, then it loses its hold over you because you're not resisting it. You're not identifying with it. And literally, having a direct experience, whether it's emotional suffering, whether it's physical suffering, whether it's critical minds, I've listened to your minds. I know how you go on and on and on. When we identify with the pain body, we're going to suffer. So when we can acknowledge we have a pain body and we invite that pain body in, even if his name is Bangor, and Bangor is embraced and loved, well, then we are skillfully navigating through the suffering on the planet. So today's talk is called Falling in Love with Where You Are and is based on a book of poetry by Jeff Foster, one of my teachers. He's a non-dual teacher. And he has a way of expressing himself that is so beautiful. I want you to get a taste of him. I was devouring this yesterday. He says, say yes to this moment, exactly as it is. Say yes to yourself, exactly as you are. That doesn't mean giving up on the possibilities for change in your life. It doesn't mean that the answers won't arrive and that sadness won't disappear or that the pain won't ease. He said, instead of trying to skip to tomorrow's certainty, which is so many of us want, he said, trust in the uncertainty of today. And instead of rushing toward an answer to the next scene of your life, well, trust that this creative scene of this moment is the perfect one for you. And he says, all of a sudden, there are no answers yet, but I'm okay with that. Huh. Instead of trying to run toward joy or bliss in the future, trust that the present moment, with its sorrows and its doubts and its anxiety, or whatever shape cosmic intelligence is taking, is the moment that you need to be in. So instead of running towards some future idea where we'll feel certain, we open to the uncertainty of now, to the anxiety of now, and that's the way to meet it. That's the way to fall in love with where you are. He's saying certainty may or may not come in time. Finn's got a new job. Hallelujah, praise Jesus. But even when he didn't, he was fine. So certainty may or may not come in time, and answers may arrive or they may not, and joy may burst forth or it may not, and thrilling moments may present themselves sooner or later, but don't skip over the treasures of what's going on right now. When Adam came over on Thursday morning and he'd had the big tiff with the little boy who'd thrown the tantrum, and he said it hurt my feelings when he was hitting me and pushing me away, and I said, but he's a four-year-old. And you know what? He heard it, and he went home, and he became this open-hearted awareness. And what was a little traumatized kid became a beautiful, awakened four-year-old who now knows that there is no death, all because he met what was. He fell in love with what was. So if answers come, well, they will emerge from the fertilizer of your own not knowing. That's where they'll arise, from within yourself. So then you don't come to me and say, David, what should I think? What should I know? I'll say, open to your heart. Ask your heart. It knows. Right. It's the rich soil of your own doubts. So if joy shows her face, she will emerge from pain that has been touched deeply with compassion. And if a new life grows, well, it will grow in the only birthplace that there is to grow, and that is now. So this moment is your access point. This moment is the portal. This moment is the gateway for grace, for everything that you've longed for. So don't skip over it in pursuit of tomorrow's imagined glories. Look no further than your own painful moment, and in that you're going to find the grace, you're going to find the ease, you're going to find the freedom. So everything is a gateway to our own liberation. Maybe, perhaps, the best gateway is the very resistance, the very darkness that we've been trying to get rid of. Because we want certainty and control. We want to be in this happy place that we project sometime in the future. And you can ask Nancy. She found it right in the desolate forests of winter. She didn't need to wait till spring when the flowers are blooming. I know we all want spring. We want flower. We want warmth. And today we have a chilly day in Huntsville. My little bushes are all curled up because their leaves contract when it's cold. And when the sun comes out, they open up. I have my beautiful fish. I only have one left now, my koi. His name is Napoleon Solo. And when it becomes winter time, he goes to the bottom of the pond and he just sits there. and he isolates, he hibernates. And I go every now and then to see if he's ready to get out of his hibernation. And he sees me there and he says, well, you know, I'm hibernating down here. And I said, I know you are. And just yesterday when it was warm and spring was flirting with us, he came to the top of the pond and he flapped his tail and he hit me with some water. And I said, I know you're down there, Napoleon, and I'll get you some food any day now. And so I'm having a relationship with a fish, and that's okay. At the end of the book, he does this thing about what healing looks like. And he says this, for those of you who might be suffering, he says, our wounds, when they are ignored or denied or repressed or neglected or pushed away, well, then those wounds begin to fester within ourselves. And they eventually poison us. And not only do they poison us, but they poison those around us. If we haven't met our stuff, if we haven't embraced this inner demon, if you will. So he says, those very same wounds, the physical ones, the emotional ones, when given a kind attention, when given permission to exist in this vast landscape of the present moment, when illumined unconditionally by our own loving light of awareness that we are, well, then they begin to heal naturally and without effort. So all we need to do is to expose the wound to the loving light of presence. Yeah. You know, when your animal comes up to you and they're not doing well, I've watched Jody do this a million times and she just opens her heart, then the most dysfunctional, upset pug can all of a sudden find peace and harmony in the embrace of someone who meets him where he is, not where we want him to be. And that's why it's so important how we see things. You know, when all the years that I've had dogs, I tried to do it the correct way, watching Cesar Millan, the dog whisperer. And there was one episode that was so moving for me. There was a very traumatized dog at the veterinarians. And they brought in Cesar and they said, this dog is, you know, it's got all these issues. It was sitting in the vet's office. It was shaking like a leaf. And he says, have you taken this dog for a walk? And they said, oh, no. This dog is way too damaged in consciousness for us to do that. And then he looked at the people in the veterinary office and he says, the problem isn't the dog, the problem is you. You see this dog and you see its wounds and you identify it as the wounds, but you don't call forth its wholeness. You don't embrace the dog right where it is. And in a holy instant, by him seeing the dog differently, taking him into that field of love, loving him right where he was with all of his diagnoses, the dog began to shift. So what if each one of us gets to do that? Love our life right where we are, not where we want to be. And in being in that surrendered place, Seamus did a beautiful treatment in our revealing service. Well, then we surrender that it should be anything other than it is. And then when we embrace it as it is, then it has a way of evolving. And isn't that what we're all doing here in a strange sort of way, evolving? I was out there working in the garden yesterday and my neighbor walked past with a mask on and his gloves on. And he said to me, have you seen Debbie? I don't know who Debbie is. I said, who? And he says, the girlfriend that I used to have. I said, oh, no, I haven't seen her in a long time. You and she haven't, her car hasn't been in front of your house for 6 months. He said, well, he said, I wondered if she liked you. I wondered if she came over and said hi. He said, she wanted me to get the vaccine and I don't want to get the vaccine. And then I got the COVID and then she left. And I said, oh, well, I'm sorry about that. She was such a nice lady. And then he says, you know, I hate to wear these masks. And I said, well, you know, they're a little inconvenient, but I try to be on the safe side. And he says, but I do like that distancing, and I've never washed my hands so much in my whole life. And I says, well, there you go. There's a positive aspect to this. If I see Debbie, I'll tell her you miss her. Make no mistake. Healing is not the mending of something that's broken, nor is it the making good of something that's bad, nor is it even the transmutation of darkness into the light. Rather, healing is much deeper than that. You know, in religious science, they say there's nothing to heal. There's only the wholeness to be revealed. Well, then we don't identify with that part of us that we call sick. We start identifying with the wholeness that's inherent, where the peace is inherent underneath the trauma. And the joy is inherent right in the midst of sadness. I watched a satsang one night with Gangaji, and a woman was in such grief. She'd lost her husband, she'd lost her dog, and I think she lost her parent, all within a matter of months. And she says, the grief is so overwhelming. She says, I think if I open to the grief, I'll die. And so she says, well, I promise you, you won't die. And she took her hand. She says, would you be willing to feel the grief right now with me? And the woman started gagging, and then she says, breathe. And she started breathing, and tears were coming down her eyes. And she says, so as you touch this grief, as you embrace this grief, right now, what are you experiencing? And she said, I'm experiencing the love that never died. Yes, they died, my husband, my dog, my mother, but the love never died. So she said, so by the willingness to embrace your grief in this moment, you're experiencing this love that is eternal. It's not something to fix. It's a shift in what we identify with. So he's saying the same thing. It's much deeper than trying to fix things. It's the understanding that on the primordial level, nothing is broken. There really are no problems, but thinking makes it so. So what if we would see our world not as a broken world, but as a world that's going through a change? It's going through a growth experience. Hopefully the heart of humanity is awakening on the planet. That's what I'm sensing. That's what I'm feeling within me. So it's a much deeper than any of that. It's an understanding at a primordial level that nothing is broken and nothing is darkness and nothing is against darkness. And even our wounds are only intelligent invitations to stop and remember our deeper original nature. To remember our deeper original nature. That which doesn't have preferences, that which doesn't judge things as right or wrong. Now ask yourself, what would unconditional love, which is what you are, how would it respond to the situations in your life when a little kid throws a tantrum? What would unconditional love do? Would unconditional love get his feelings hurt? Or would unconditional love embrace little Tanger or what, Banger and hold him in your arms and realize he just needed to be held? In the Course of Miracles, they say everything is an expression of love or a cry for love, no exceptions. And so when you hear the cry for love, from some unskillful action out here, are we going to judge it and call it bad? Or are we going to see it as a cry to be held, to be embraced? Embrace the world just the way it is. This is what he's saying. It's an invitation to stop and remember our deeper original nature, which is ever present, which is undying, which is unborn, and which is already whole. Oh, isn't that nice to know that your original nature is already whole, that was never born and never dies, that it's unchanging in a changing world? So could we hold those seemingly opposites in our heart? What we are is this unconditional love that was never born and never dies. I was telling Gabe about love. Next week I'm speaking about Rumi, and that'll be an interesting one because, I mean, Rumi was the guru of love. And it starts with the lover and the beloved. And basically, the beloved is divine love. And the lover is you and me. And the lover is seeking the beloved, only to realize that all there is the beloved. So when the beloved awakens within the lover, well, then we see the beloved everywhere. I see the beloved in Michael and in Adam and in Tia and Shay. It's the same beloved. So it awakens within the finite. It's the infinite awakening within the finite. Is that too big of a love for you? Rumi says, what you think of love are but subtle degrees of domination and servitude. But true love comes fully formed like the moonlight in the window. Now, what would a love like that be in your life? Stay in the question. Rumi says, all swimming in the ocean of love ends in drowning. Well, what drowns? The idea of me is the separate self. Then all that's left is the love. There's no David anymore. There's just this beautiful divine love shining through David. And then this beloved that David has discovered, he begins to see in a Barbara, and he sees it in a Gigi. He sees it in the Sylvie. It's the same divine love. He sees it in the tree out there. He sees it in the little butterfly that Jean Anne gives me. It's the same love, the lumina naturae, the light within nature, meeting the lumina dei, the light of the divine, the same light, the same love. And we begin to awaken to this imperative on the planet. If we don't, as a species, awaken to our true nature, I think we're doomed as a separate species where we think of other as separate. It's not separate. It's all you. That's the invitation. So seen in the light of this awareness, our wounds are not really our wounds at all. There are doorways to freedom. That's why they call them sacred wounds. Wow. Your sacred wounds. Adam had a stroke when he was young. I had a heart attack at 69. He's still here. I'm still here. It was a sacred wound. If it isn't, well, then you feel like you're a victim of it. But if you can see the grace in it, well, then it's all a big wake-up call. You know, They are the greatest spiritual teachers we have, he says, these wounds of ours. They heal us from all inherited notions of sickness and health, of ignorance, and the idea of awakening, of sin and salvation. Don't you love it when someone wants to save you? And I always say, from what? And true salvation is learning to open to something that's already there, and it will save you by awakening within you to the truth of who you are. So I'm going to invite us to learn to fall in love with right where we are. Again, this is the moment that life has given us, and we consciously breathe into this holy instant of now. Raul, do you want to give me a mindfulness bell in a minute or two? And we'll go into a gentle meditation. Love as a felt embrace. Love as an expression of intimacy. Love is the deepest acceptance of what is right now with a grateful heart. Love is that gentle compassion and kindness that would have us feel empathy for all creation. And ultimately, love as the playful surprise of wonder and joy when an otter jumps on your boat and says, life is here to have fun and not to take it too seriously. So love is going to come in all these many ways, and it knows exactly when to present itself to each one of us. So whatever you might be experiencing, I'm going to invite Raul to ring the bell. And with that ring of the bell, we say yes. And in that conscious yes, we open. And we recognize what is arising within us. And whatever it is, we invite it in. We allow it. Continue to breathe consciously. And we make an intention to love this life right where we are in this holy instant. So if there is perhaps a pain in the body, in the back, well, we breathe into that pain. I hear you. I am here for you. And then we exhale and we let go of whatever needs to be let go of, an identification with a story around that pain or some resistance to that pain. We just meet it with love in the embrace of the breath, in the embrace of now. And then we return to the sacred moment and we recognize what is arising within me now. And we allow it. Whatever it is, we get intimate with it, and we nurture ourselves. I find that I chant this song to myself when I'm struggling. I find my saying, I will be gentle with myself. I will be tender with my heart. And I'll hold myself like a newborn baby child. And then this overactive doer that I've become, I'll say, and I'll only go as fast as the slowest part of me feels safe to go. And in that slowing down, I stop trying to control things. I stop the efforting, which can be so exhausting. And I enter into the sacred moment again, where a simple bell or a conscious breath can return me to that radical place of stopping. I stop feeding off my thoughts. I stop feeding off the emotional body that might be caught up in a troubling emotion. And I start consciously breathing. Stop running away from that which is uncomfortable. I stop running toward that which I think I want. And as I stop, again, I say yes. Present moment. Wonderful moment. And I observe the silence, which is the language of God. Not as something foreign, but as something really comfortable. I listen to the silence of the trees and how they're fully awake and aware, but yet they're not reflecting on past days when they were maybe younger or future days when that may be taller. They're fully awake in the present moment of now, and they respond to what is. Looking out of the window this morning, 28 degrees, I notice that the rhododendrons, the leaves are all curled up tightly as they're responding to the cold weather. And this afternoon, when it gets to the 50s, I'm sure that that same tree that was cold, its leaves will be open and its buds will be swelling as she's fully responding to present moment awareness, accepting what is, falling in love right where she is. And so everything becomes a mute gospel. Everything is pointing toward liberation. And so I say to the tree, teach me and show me the way. And then I listen with my heart. Or I'll say to the pain body when it arises, show me the way. What are you pointing toward? And I'll notice how my attention is crucial. And when I put my attention on the wholeness and the peace that underlie the chaos and anxiety, well, then the peace and the calm, the balance and the harmony become the flow in which I journey. I also notice that when I become reactionary and resistant and have expectations and attachments, that I suffer with that. And so I practice the art of conscious choice in this holy instant of now. It is the Bible that says, choose you this day who you shall follow. Divine presence with its freedom, or the world with its chaos and suffering. And so in this conscious moment of now, I choose to open to the grace of letting go and letting God, the grace of saying, yes, this too is good, and this too is for God, and I demand to see the blessings. And as I align myself to that beautiful essence of life itself, well, then it shows us how to be. I hear Emerson within me who says, be and not seem. He says, let us acquiesce. Let us surrender. And when I get my bloated nothingness out of the way, I connect with the divine circuits. And so I turn off the radio in my mind this Sunday morning. All the voices in the head that would try to lure me into all kinds of aberrant thoughts and conclusions and criticisms and judgments and worries and turn off the radio and feed off the silence. Feed off the peace. Drink in the compassion. Revel in radical acceptance. Accepting life just as it is. And bringing love to this holy instant of now. A love that bears all things, accepts all things, and endures all things. And know ourselves as that. Ernest Holmes said, it's only this love that sees love. And when we discover it, well, then wheresoever we look, we're going to see the face of love. In a little butterfly on our dining room table, in a penguin sitting on her egg, in an ancient tree reaching up toward the sky, in a neighbor who had COVID and who's smiling and doing well. Wheresoever I look, I see the face of God, I see the face of love. And when we fall in love with where we are, well, then we realize it's everywhere. It's everywhere and it's nowhere. And we know it. We know it intimately. So place your hand on your heart if you're so inclined. The cave of the heart wherein God lies, as the Sufis say. Knowing that when we learn to listen with the heart, we can feel the heart of the planet. We can feel the heart of the world. They're not separate. And we meet in this shared intimacy of belonging to the universe. We are the universe. We are existence itself, awakening in space and time. And yet we're eternal beings. We are that spaciousness awakening. And so identifying no longer as the wave, we begin to experience the ocean of love within ourselves. And instead of seeing ourselves as separate beings, we realize that we're one life, God's life, perfect. And that awareness begins to flower. It's not about you. It's never been about you. It's always been about this love flowering within us. A love that accepts all things, bears all things, and endures all things. So we smile to that love. We fall in love with right where we are, sitting in this room, touching a penguin, touching our heart, touching each other at that deep level of oneness. And so from that shared place of oneness, from that divine love, let's say the heart salutation together, which goes, I honor you. I respect you. I love you. This beloved presence within me bows to the beloved presence within all creation. We smile to this love. We exhale to this love. We inhale to this love. We stop in this love. We start in this love. We see through this love. There is nothing but this love. And it is awakening within us right now. Open your eyes, look around you, see the love shining. The lumina dii, the lumina naturae, light upon light, nur ala nur. There it is, there you are. There's nothing to do, you're already there. And so it is. See you later, alligator. Happy Valentine's Day, y'all. And let me know if you want to jump into the next class in March. Be safe.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. More information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org. You create a brand new world.